Life Audio. You're listening to Therapy and Theology, and I'm your host, Carly Merclear. This podcast is a space where we explore popular topics and questions related to the convergence of faith, feelings, spiritual formation, and more. My prayer is that through these conversations, we will grow in our awareness of who we are as beloved children of God, learn to acknowledge our needs and emotions with curiosity and compassion, and rediscover the purpose and power of our unique stories through the lens of the gospel. As a licensed therapist and ministry leader, I want to give voice to the many questions we face while cultivating a clearer view of how our faith informs our healing journey. I don't have all the answers, but I am committed to going deeper and walking together. So whether you've been to therapy or know exactly what you believe when it comes to theology, I want to invite you to join this journey as we fearlessly name the complexities of our present reality and press into the hope of the gospel story. So are you ready? Let's jump into today's question and begin this journey together.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Hey friends, welcome back to Therapy and Theology. We are in the midst of a two-part conversation with Sid Halsklaw, and we are discussing God attachments and how our nervous system and embodiment practice actually helps us live a flourishing life, one connected to God and others. I hope you enjoy the rest of this conversation. Maybe linking all this together, I'm wondering for you in the work that you're doing, you know, how do you see these aspects of the nervous system and our lived experience really play into, you know, people's experience with disconnection or connection with God?
Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, I think, you know, we're doing a lot of work with attachment, you know.
Yeah.
So that's what the book we're currently writing is all about, attachment, okay, spiritual formation. So how our early childhood formation does impact our spiritual formation, whether we want to acknowledge it or not, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, just the way that we're raised early on in those relationships that we have with our caregivers, and I'm sure you know this, and probably some of your listeners know all this already, but it actually does shape the way that your nervous system matures, because we're born without a fully developed nervous system. And so our nervous system is still building and constructing itself during our early years. And so that's where we're constructing our reward system, like what we're going to do because it feels good and we get a reward for it. It's when we're constructing our sense of like neuroception, like how we detect what's going on in our own bodies, what's going on between us and other bodies. It's how we detect our external environments and world around us. Mm. It also like is building our ability to have insight and awareness into like other people, the way that other people are thinking or what we perceive they might be thinking. And so all of that is like physiologically wiring. And it does really impact the way that you, the things that you believe about the world around you, the things that you believe about yourself, the things that you believe about other people, and the things that you believe about God.
Yeah.
And all of that is sort of like in your default system. And so you might have no idea of that. You know, we talk about the water you swim in. That's the water you swim in. And so, like, for example, I had one client who came to me who was just, you know, expressing grief in the way that he would look around his family. He had, you know, four kids, And he's like, I just look at the relationship that they have with my wife and they see like so much joy and connection and like they want to talk to her and share their life with her.
Sure.
And then they don't do that with me. And like when I reach out and make effort to them, it's like they don't really respond to me like that. And, you know, and then he's also like, and I've recognized in my life with God, the way my wife talks about connecting with God is so foreign to me. Like,
yeah,
he's like, I can't even imagine having the kinds of conversations with God that she does. Like, I can't even imagine God wanting to talk to me, you know? And so as we got to know each other and as he talked a little bit more about like his early formation was a very, you know, there wasn't a lot of talk about your inner world, how your emotions or what you were feeling or what was going on for you in your body. And yet he would say, I had a really good childhood. I didn't have any trauma. Like I had all of my physical needs were met. My parents came to all of my sporting events. We had family dinner every evening. Like it was super consistent. But then there's like, well, how much did you talk about like what was going on inside your world?
Yeah.
Or was it? And he's like, oh, it was really all external. And so that deeply impacted the way that he lived out his faith, right?
Sure.
He did a lot of Bible study. He did a lot of you know, act like sort of intellectual kind of faith things. And he had a daily quiet time where he would set aside time and he would study the Bible. And he would, you know, memorize scripture and he would pray, but his prayer was like talking at God because he knew he was supposed to, but not sensing any sort of like, this is a relationship, like a back and forth. And so even when I asked him, like, how do you imagine God feels about you? Or what do you think?
I love that question.
You're praying, you know, and he's like, I have no idea. Like, I don't even have a category for that. Right. And so, you know, the work we had to do together was starting with like just and it feels counterintuitive. But I told him, like, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to do a body scan every day. He's like, why? Why would I do that?
Yeah.
I'm like, well, because you're probably living pretty disconnected from your physiology. Mm-hmm. And so even just paying attention to your body will help you connect in a way and build some new neural pathways that will then later come into play in other ways. But, you know, just try it. So he tried it. And as he did it, all of a sudden, he's like, I never realized how much stress I carry in my shoulders, wow, my neck. I never realized this feeling that I have in the pit of my stomach. Like, and he started to notice that, like, when he would feel the desire to withdraw from everybody, that would always be accompanied by like an like a tension or an anxiety feeling is what he started to call it.
Yeah.
Stomach. And he started to recognize that what he had always said, it's just my personality, it's just who I am, I'm an introvert, I need a lot of time alone, was actually a protection mechanism.
Yeah.
It's like,
withdraw.
Feeling overwhelmed, I don't know how to relate to people right now, the safest thing I can do is go away and be by myself. And so it was paying attention to his body that helped him see that. And then he started to notice that when he was praying, he felt the same thing.
Wow.
And so to notice, I feel that desire to withdraw when I'm trying, or what I always thought was connecting with God. And so then just starting to learn to, okay, don't run away from that feeling in your stomach,
right?
Just allow it to be there, right? Have compassion for it, be curious. And then also say, and I'm going to allow it to be there, but I'm not going to do the default response of run away. I'm going to stay present for just a few minutes longer than I would, right? And to sort of try to like begin to expand. So that was, you know, one story of how understanding his body started to open up new pathways. And then we talked about, you know, building joy and appreciation, because the more that you can build your capacity for joy, the more you build your capacity for difficult emotions, and it increases your window of tolerance for everything. So we did a lot of that kind of work, and that really helped him. So that's like on one side of things. On the other side, you know, I mean, clients who come in who have this sort of sense, which is more like me, what my story was that sort of hypervigilance of like always watching the people around you, paying attention to the people around you, and sort of like immediately responding to everybody's needs, but not knowing your own.
Yeah.
And not being in touch with what you actually need and what rest looks like for you. And then, you know, relationally with God, having a life that's based heavily on how you're feeling.
Right?
And so, like, I just feel like God's not around. Like, I feel like God has left me. And then that becoming an opportunity to question everything about, like, is God even real? And, like, what am I living for?
Yeah.
And that's sort of like, well, that's because that sort of that hypervigilance around the connection with other people turns into a hypervigilance of that connection with God. And the moment you don't feel that connection, you start to wonder if it's there. Right. And so doing the work it's like with that type of insecurity, the work is more of the intellectual, right? Like doing more of the study of scripture and doing more of that work of the mind. Whereas on the other side, if the relationship with God is all in the work of mind, then the other side is like actually becoming more in touch with emotions and with your body. And that's how, you know, I think those two sides sort of, when we integrate, is when we grow in our secure attachment.
Yeah.
Or have access to all the tools rather than the ones that we only use certain tools. And when those fail, then we're stuck.
It sounds like this balance, right? Of like using both sides of our brain, being able to kind of balance optimally. And I hope that this is helpful for maybe people that are learning this for the first time, this idea of our image of God and how it can so vastly impact the way we show up with him. And I think that's a really helpful way of connecting it. I see that oftentimes when I'm doing work with clients as well, where I'll just ask, you know, like what's your, similar to the question that you asked of, you know, how would you just describe God in a few words?
Yeah.
And oftentimes their connection is like, oh, he sounds like my dad, my earthly dad, or sounds like this authority figure in my life. And being able to have that balance of, you know, our experiences and how they're impacting us, and then bringing that to, like you said, that the truth of who God is. And specifically, I think I do a lot of work around who God is not with my clients.
Absolutely.
Because of all of the influences and the experiences that they've had.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We don't even know how we think about God and how we live in response to what we imagine until we get explicit about it.
Yes.
Right? And start naming it and actually describing. And then we go, oh, wait.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so much of that is driven by the way that our nervous system develops at a young age. And the really good news, right, is that we can reshape our nervous system.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't happen overnight, but it does happen. And when we practice and when we're intentional, you know, and that's most of the work I do, is like your attachment story is not like a Myers-Briggs type.
Yes.
Or, you know, it's not like, okay, now that you know what kind of insecure attachment you have, that's just your label and you're stuck
right
for the rest of your life. Instead, it's like, okay, now that you understand where your insecurity lies, now you know how to build the security there.
Yeah.
And how to renew and restore your relationship with God. Mm-hmm. And it's so hopeful.
It is. It really is. I really don't love when people say like, oh, my attachment style is blank, you know, because
That's why I like to talk about attachment story.
I like that.
Attachment history.
Yeah, adaption.
Or even attachment strategy. It's not a style. Because a style is like, well, it's just my personality. It's the way I am. Yeah.
Yeah. Being able to, I had a young client, we were talking about her attachment movements, and she said, well, I like the way I am. And I said, okay, like that makes sense. I just want to check in with like how your body feels. And she was like, oh yeah, I'm anxious all the time. I was like,
yeah,
I want that to change, because that's where the work could be done, you know.
Like, because that anxiety, when we're not aware of it, is like it takes such a toll on our bodies, and
it does.
A lot of that kind of stuff is where you see people burn out, and you see people's bodies actually shut down on them.
Yeah,
autoimmune disorders and all kinds of things, because it's like, if you're not going to notice your body is eventually going to take over.
It's gonna get you. Yeah, it's gonna get you. Yeah,
yeah.
That's really, really helpful information for people. I know we've kind of touched on now like attachment and influences on God image. I don't know if there's anything else within that that could be helpful for listeners, or maybe even within the work that you do of recognizing. Like, where do people start? Where do people even start with beginning to recognize their nervous system states and then connecting it with their spiritual formation and God attachment?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing that I always like to start with people is just, you know, practicing noticing your body. So just allowing your awareness to travel all through your body and to just notice what's happening, like without needing to judge or evaluate or fix or problem solve. But just notice, like, oh, every time I scan my body, I happen to notice that there's usually tension in this part of my body, or I usually feel pain here. And then I love to just invite people to put a hand over that part of their body and just be like, okay, could you treat that part of your body with some kindness, yeah, some tenderness? And even just invite God, would you be willing to meet me here, this my body? And even if you don't feel anything, and even if you don't sense that God is actually present, just that simple prayer of invitation starts to actually prime your brain for the possibility, yeah, that God could meet you in your body.
Yeah,
I love to help people start there. And then, of course, I'm always encouraging people to build their joy capacity. So I talk about joy not in like toxic positivity kind of way, but in the way that, I know, borrowing a definition from Jim Wilder,
yeah,
who says that joy is the experience of being with someone who's glad to be with you. And just remembering times in your life where like you've walked into a room and you see an old friend and their face is like, oh, I'm so glad you're here, right? And sort of reminding yourself of that, imagining yourself back in that experience, practicing that. Because they've done brain scans that when you remember an experience in vivid detail, your brain is experiencing it as if it's happening. And so when you remember that time when you were at the beach with your good friend and you recall this feeling of the sand between your toes and the feeling of the sun on your face and the breeze on your skin and the crashing of the waves, when you remember all of that and you remember what it felt like to be with your friend there, you're giving your brain this beautiful wash of all of these beautiful neurotransmitters that are then also building new neural pathways of joy and building your capacity to experience that gladness of someone else to be with you. And the really good news is that God is always glad to be with us. And that's why my husband and I wrote our first book, right? It's like we want people to be convinced that God does not just put up with you.
Yes,
like
he
enjoys you and wants to be with you. And so, you know, so that even if you're living a life that feels somewhat isolated and you feel like people aren't glad to be with you, you always can have that experience of God being glad to be with you. And building that slowly over time by building an appreciation practice, a gratitude practice. I know people are like, what are, you know, it just like it's old hat by now and people are probably tired of hearing about it, but gratitude is so good for your brain and your body. And it's worth putting the time in, no matter how cheesy it feels, because it really does build your capacity and all of that capacity building, you know. I mean, I could launch into a whole nother conversation right now. I don't know what ton of time you
get.
But the foundational part of our identity is joy.
Yeah.
That, like, you know, babies are ideally born into the world in families where people are glad to be with them and have been anticipating their arrival. And so, like, that's how our brains are designed to be, like, that's how our identity gets shaped and formed, is with that joy.
Yeah.
And most of us are lacking joy. And so to do that joy building work actually helps us get a greater sense of who I am and what it's like me to do and how it's like me to behave. And so that helps really lay the foundation of, you know, working on who am I? Who does God say that I am? It's easier to believe who God says that I am if I can actually like experience some joy.
Yeah. So I'm curious about that in relation specifically to clients that maybe, or those listening that maybe have had a very, I would say, long history or consistent history of spiritual abuse, or the lack of the family system being an avenue for joy, and I would say identity building, but then also maybe the messages within their Christian narrative being, you know, God is unpleased with you and God is judging you. In that sense, would we go back to starting with like who God is not and like going back to the truth of who God is, or would there be other avenues for that?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you would like me know that everybody's story is different. So there's no one right approach that works for everybody. But first and foremost, I would just want to say to anybody who's listening, and that is your story, that like that is not how God intended your life to go.
Yeah.
And that is not his good design. And I'm so sad that that has been the story that you've lived. And like to be kind to yourself for where you find yourself, because it's not your fault. Like you didn't choose this. You didn't do this to yourself. God didn't do this to you. And so just to maybe start with like the patience of like, yeah, I'm not happy with where I am. I don't love my story, but you know, at least at this, like, I'm going to start from where I am.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, if there's a lot of spiritual abuse, then we don't start with a relationship with God. At least I don't. I always start with like, what's one simple thing that you might be able to enjoy today? You know, and so it's like,
love that.
Go sit in the sun for 2 minutes, or can you, you know, take a hot bath, or can you really enjoy and savor a piece of chocolate, or can you, you know, whatever you can do to really enjoy. And then also like trying to do things to remind yourself that you're safe. And so even just doing like a, you know, like a sensory grounding kind of experience of, you know, making sure that you remember I am safe right here, right now. There's some practices like tapping that can be really helpful for that, you know, breathing exercises, because if that's been your story, then likely your nervous system is constantly perceiving threat everywhere. And so the first step is to help your body start to calm down. And so those calming, grounding kinds of practices are such good work. And so that's where I would want to start. And then once there's a little bit of that sense of like, I can actually find some peace and safety in my body, then I would probably start to do that work of who are the people in your life who have been, you know, because a lot of times when that is your story, you actually develop a blindness to any bids for connection that other people might be making. You just don't see it because you don't expect it.
Yeah. It's like
either that or you might like almost hallucinate rejection when it's not there. And so just starting to sort of be a detective in your life, like even like, did you go to the grocery store and the person who bumped into you said, oh, I'm so sorry. Right. And just noticing that there was a kindness there.
Yeah.
There wasn't an anger. There was a kindness. Right. Or even just, you know, you're going at the park and you enjoyed watching a little kid on the swing. And for a moment, you could believe that there was some joy and goodness in the world because you saw a little kid laughing, right? And so just starting to sort of detect those simple things that can start to, and to start to gather data.
Yeah.
And to start to try to see a little bit differently than you've always seen. And then to start to live into that land of possibility of like, what if God is not who you've been told he is? Like, you don't have to believe that he's not, but just allowing yourself to be like, what if, you know, like, can I live in this sort of season of like, well, what if it might be different? And, you know, to let that sort of bloom and develop over time. And then eventually moving into, okay, now let's imagine that God is like this. Like, just, you don't have to believe it's true. Just imagine if he was like that. What would it be like to live with a God like that?
Yeah.
And so I really like to kind of do that sort of testing and possibility kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because
especially
if you've experienced spiritual abuse, the last thing you need is someone coming directly at you and saying, that's not the way it is. This is the way it is, because you don't trust that.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
That's so helpful. I think also within that, there's such a beauty of holding like the tension of like, God is not in a rush, right? Like, I love the idea of we're not even going to start with God because we can't even access that yet. Like, let's just start with enjoying things and allowing ourselves the pacing of that. That is so important because I think there can be this, I have to figure it out. Like, I got to have the answers.
Oh, yeah.
And being able to slow down and say, he's not in a rush. He's willing to, you know, wait. Yeah. Or there isn't a rush to figure it all out.
Yeah. There's one thing that I love to do with people to help demonstrate this. And I know that this is a, you know, this isn't a video podcast, but listeners could even do this a minute of like, I learned this in a coaching training and it was like, oh, I can translate that into everything spiritual. But if you take one of your fists and just make a tight, tight fist, like as tight as you possibly can, and then you take the other hand and you try to open it, but that fist has to stay closed, and you just like do that and you feel that like impossibility and that tension and that like, oh, it just doesn't work. And then try it again. We're making a fist. You can do it too, Carly. Make a fist.
Okay.
And then take your other hand and just like hold it gently instead of trying to pull it open. and just notice that, like, when I do that, my fist automatically just relaxes.
Yeah,
without
me too.
Trying.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of like, if that serves as sort of a metaphor for, like, when we try so hard in our spiritual life and in our, you know, in our everything, when we try so hard to fix it, it's like we just create more stress and tension. But when we can just go gently and go with that compassion and that tenderness and patience, then things start to relax. And, you know, the places where we've dug in so deep with our protection strategies start to feel safer to let go.
Yeah. Oh, so good. So many helpful perspectives in this conversation, Sid. I really appreciate it. I'd love to kind of finish up our time by maybe just having you share a little bit about what's coming for you guys and maybe some ways so people can get connected with the work that you do.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, the first book that we wrote is called Does God Really Like Me? Discovering the God Who Wants to Be With You. So that would be a good starting point for anybody who has a concept of, like, God being angry and wrathful and judgmental and, like, just barely putting up with you because he took it all out on Jesus. It's a very, it sort of starts in Genesis and goes through Revelation, but not in, like, a boring, dry kind of way. We tell a lot of personal stories, and there's practices in there as well, just to help sort of reshape your narrative of what God's story is all about, mm-hmm. who God is. So that would be a way for some people. I do a cohort that I'm in the middle of right now, but I run it a couple times a year. It's called Rooted: Integrative Tools for Lasting Change. And it's like body regulation tools mixed with spiritual practices. So sort of trying to bring spiritual practices and body work together to try to find integration there. And then my husband and I also do a six-week cohort called Attaching to God, which is discovering and sort of unpacking how did God design us to be attached and how did he design us to be connected with others and with him? How does that go wrong? How can learning about that help us to name the insecurities so that we can grow into the security? So we're starting another one of those cohorts on April 23rd, I believe. It's the end of April.
Okay.
And then, I mean, if anybody wants to get a doctorate, we're doing a DMIN program at Western Theological Seminary. Our cohort for this year is full, but we'll probably run another cohort next year. So that's something people can check out as well. And then I do some Emmanuel prayer group facilitation stuff, or I'm beginning to do that more. And then I do some one-on-one coaching work as well. And I also lead people through the Ignatian spiritual exercises. So there's a couple different ways. But yeah, just going to my website would probably be a good place to start, and just sending me a message.
Awesome. Well, I will link all of these offerings in the show notes. But Sid, thank you so much for being with me today and sharing your heart with my audience.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of Therapy and Theology. If you have a question or topic you would like discussed on a future episode, please feel free to email me or drop it in the comments. Also, don't forget to subscribe to have each week's episode instantly downloaded to your podcasts. And see the show notes for resources mentioned in this episode. To access more content and join my monthly email list for the latest updates and info, visit my website at carlymarkluyer.com.
Hi, I'm Beckett Cook, host of The Beckett Cook Show. I lived as a gay man in Hollywood for many, many years until I had a radical encounter with Jesus 13 years ago. Since then, I've gotten my master's degree in seminary and published a book called A Change of Affection. On my podcast, The Beckett Cook Show, I sit down with fascinating Christian scholars and thinkers to address the lies of the culture and bring the biblical truth to bear on those lies. To start listening now, go to lifeaudio.com or search for The Beckett Cook Show on your favorite podcasting platform.